a taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
Good morning. Welcome to Spoken Word on 3CR. I'm Tina Janoukas. 3CR broadcasts from the lands of the Wurundjeri of the Kulin Nation. I pay my respects to elders past and present. Today on the program, we'll hear part two of my conversation with poet and philosopher George Vassilakopoulos. Apart from his extensive philosophical writings and his lecturing in philosophy at La Trobe University, George has published several collections of poetry in Greek. His most recent collection, Ash Poems, is published in English by Repress. What I find remarkable about aspects of his body of work is the way it engages us both philosophically and aesthetically. His poems are sensual yet philosophical, and his philosophy can echo with the feeling of poetry, especially in his philosophical work, Monumental Fragments. In part one, George and I spoke about poetry and philosophy, about death, history, and what George calls the gathering, whether between two people or in the impersonal gathering of us all. If you haven't heard part one, you can download the podcast. At the end of part one, George had been reflecting on poetry and philosophy. In part two, we pick up where we left off, turning to the sensual images in Ash Poems and exploring further George's reflections on the relationship between poetry and philosophy in his work. George, there are such sensual images flowing through Ash Poems that one could almost read the collection as an ode to love. But philosophy itself also deals in love, the love of wisdom, of truth, of meaning. What is the role of the erotic, of love in your poetry? Could you read You Stutter, Sighs of Brogan, Out of This World, and speak to this erotic element in your work, which seems tied to death?
Here's the poem. You stutter, sighs of broken words, out of this world. Between breathing in and out, you, moment of eternity. I sprinkle your abyss with poems, redeeming us with surprises. Yeah. What can I say? How can I situate myself with respect to this poem? Yeah, stuttering, I guess, refers to the inability to speak through words, simply because words have broken down under the weight of history itself. This breaking down, it's not a personal kind of thing. It is what confronts us, what, so to speak, imposes itself on us. But those broken words are out of this world simply because the world doesn't recognize broken words. The world somehow keeps operating by utilizing words and common meanings, words which are basically at the mercy of those who control power. So insofar as the poem deals with broken words, words already come from out of this world. And I guess the challenge then becomes, can we find something in this breaking down of words? Is it a kind of absolute nihilism, or there is an element of positivity creating something out of rubbles? Now, those words come from the you of the other. This you can be the you of the gathering of the two, or this you can be the participant in the limitless, unconditional gathering of us all, which does not just include what we call humanity.
But you do use in your poems sensual images that are reminiscent of the lyrical poet. So, for example, you say in another poem, our hands weave our bodies with the void into cloaks of night rhythms. We sway in each other's breathing, fathoming their silence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I could read that as a love poem.
It is a love poem. It is a love poem. And the bodily sense of ourselves plays here a defining kind of role. How can I explain this? Well, what I could say is that insofar as we are in the moment of the demise of the erotic gathering of all, we try to find refuge in the erotic gathering of the two. That's a place of refuge, if you like. Provided, and this is what happens, I guess, in a poetry like mine, provided that the meeting place of those two, the meeting place of those bodies, so to speak, is the emptiness. And anyway, we don't have time to discuss it, I guess. In my philosophy, I explore the notion that the sense of a body as a whole, which translates itself into the erotic attraction towards the other, is activated through a fusing of the void. So our bodies are fused by the cosmic void, and that's how that we become erotic. So when we meet, encounter the other lovingly, erotically, we are already gatherers of the cosmic void, which is basically meaningless.
And which is why in that poem you talk about our hands with our bodies with the void.
That's right, exactly, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And the emptiness of the page refers to this void in which we operate, you see. And, of course, the void here, or when I call the cosmic void, is not something far distant. You know, we need to travel. It's surrounding us. Space is a form of the void. The air we breathe is a form of the void. We constantly perpetuate ourselves in the world by negotiating our being, encountering our being through the void, through the indifferent element, the space, the air, the light, the horizon, etc., etc. Yeah.
Now, reading your poetry, you know, trying to make sense of it and engage with it, understand it, it seems to me that in both your poetry and philosophy, the fragment seems to gesture towards origins, toward a time before the split between feeling and thought, poetry and philosophy. Could you read You Float Into the Half-Dream and reflect on whether time can fall back into itself and reopen the possibility of a unity between mind and feeling, perhaps a less violent way of being?
Yeah. Okay, here's the poem. You float into the half-dream of my poem. The other half walls that keep the wind out. Breathe its silence and spit the echo of the void into words. Return our tribe to the beginning. Yeah. How can I respond to this poem? The tribe here is a tribe of visionaries, if you like. Visionaries of Eros. And the beginning operates at, you know, a number of different dimensions. It is our past, it is the vision of the future, and it is the present. It is a beginning we always invoke the moment we encounter something. The something can be the other human being. It can be an animal, it can be a stone, it can be a tree, it can be anything at all. So it constantly refers to a beginning. What is the meaning of a beginning? The beginning, I guess, refers to the fact that encounters are always projects. They never have an end, if you like. They always begin from the beginning, unfold, and every single time they become, if you like, aware of themselves, they begin again.
So it's an eternal...
It's a kind of eternal... eternal.
Would you call it a return? What would you call it?
It's a return in the sense that that the ultimate challenge is to be able to experience the same as new.
So it's a utopic moment.
It's a utopic moment, yes. To experience the same as new involves a kind of, if you like, the intensity of surprise. Usually we associate the new, I don't know, in art, with leaving behind, so to speak, the old. Okay. Perhaps, though, the challenge for humanity is to be able to experience the same as new, thus recreating it without changing the fundamentals. Perhaps we have this experience with, I don't know, friends. You encounter your friend and the encounter has a surprise, a pleasure, even though you had spent your friend with your friend time yesterday or something along these lines. So the beginning operates in a sense that both generates time and it is beyond time. And we find ourselves as humans in the dynamics of this kind of beginning, operating in history, and in a sense, humanity, the history of humanity, is the history of all those attempts to begin in the beginning, so to speak. And philosophy, poetry, mythology, even politics, come from this kind of sense. Perhaps it's not an accident that in the French Revolution, the participants attempted to make everything start from the revolution as this beginning. Or for Christians, you know, the beginning of history has a certain kind of meaning, etc., etc.
But reading your work, your poetry, I see the erotic, I see the philosophical. It seems to me that it insists, this is your poetry, it insists that poetry and philosophy cannot be disentangled.
Yeah.
What comes first for you, the poetry or the philosophy? I find it very interesting that as a philosopher, you write as a philosopher, and as a poet, you write as a poet, but there seems to be this crossover, particularly as I read Monumental Fragments, which is a philosophical work, and then I come to the poetry. And when I read Ash Poems, there are recurring images, ideas explored in the fragments that are found again in the poetry, without it being repetitive. So I find this very interesting. So I'm wondering what it is that, how you see this relationship in your philosophy and poetry. And do you see yourself as a poet, as a philosopher, as a poet-philosopher or philosopher-poet? Read Between the Worlds, perhaps.
Okay, here is the poem. Between worlds, the poem suspends us into our great solitude. We are prophecies of the abyss whispering. What is implicit in this poem, or perhaps in all the poems I have written, is a reference to what came first for me. And what came first for me was the political gathering. Neither poetry nor philosophy, although the political landscape I found myself immersed in had a lot of poetry and a lot of music. But what came first was, I think, Tasos Livadidis, another Greek poet, said, the mystery of being alone, the beautiful mystery of being the two of us, and the great mystery of being us all. I guess I operate in those spaces, in those, the interconnection between those three mysteries, how the one can participate in the two, and how then we can participate in the numberless gathering of us all. I had this kind of experience, if we can talk about experience, through my kind of political involvement in the left gatherings that became the bearers of the gathering of solidarity, togetherness, what I call the erotic element, without limits. So the political came first, and then poetry came as an act of despairing with the historical collapse of those kind of erotic gatherings. And then I found myself not wanting to get rid or let it go, what, the death of the gathering. I became obsessed with finding meaning in this, in the practice of the inability of humanity to connect, which is, of course, expressed through violence, of all kinds of violence. So poetry became this obsession of mine. Okay? Is there meaning in death? And then I became, again, very obsessed with the idea that those gatherings were, if you like, callings from the future, the visionary element. Okay, so they collapsed because, in a sense, they fulfilled the mission. Our age deals not with the past, but mainly with the future, and sometimes the future announces itself. So In my poetry, I had this kind of sense, very vague sense, of receiving this welcoming, this call from the future gathering that announced itself in revolutionary gatherings and still announces itself every time humans resist and try to create visions. But of course, the material of my poetry were ashes, death. So poetry kept me in those spaces of death, but as ashes. So the moment I would write the poem, because the poem was made from ashes, reciting the poem would destroy the poem. Out of this kind of death, the death of words, I found myself experiencing, if you like, the birth of the philosophical concept. Is it possible, out of those ashes, to recreate some kind of form that relates to visions and hopes? So the connecting, if you like, link between poetry and philosophy is this kind of experience of, if I can call it, erotic thanatology. Another Greek poet, Sepheris, tells that, he says something like, in one of his poems, I think, our words are the children of many people. Now, I wanted to reverse this. I wanted to explore the idea that people are the children of words. When words are dead, we become, if you like, bearers of death, if you like. And then I wanted to whisper to those words in order to just listen to the echo and hope that this is the echo of the future. So there is humanity can emancipate itself again. And this created an opening to philosophy.
3CR is one of a kind. We have 400 volunteers and cover an incredible array of programming content.
From special broadcast events on Invasion Day or Trans Day of Visibility to any of our 120 weekly shows, 3CR has got your radical radio listening covered.
Subscribe to 3CR at 3cr.org.au and support independent, community-owned media, free of commercial influence and government bias.
Help to keep 3CR unique by becoming a subscriber today.
Welcome back. I'm Tina Janoukas. You're listening to Spoken Word on 3CR. Today, I'm speaking with poet and philosopher George Vassilakopoulos about his latest collection of poetry, Ash Poems, published in English by Repress. This is part two of our interview, exploring how his poetry and philosophy intertwine. To put it rather differently, does this turn to philosophy in you? Is it a way to escape, if you like, the death moment that poetry represents for you?
I might be wrong, but I thought that philosophy is a deepening of death. Why? Because the poetry I was practicing was and still is an oscillating moment, a pendulum, between two erotic fields. One is the erotic field of the two, the gathering of the two, and the other is the impersonal gathering. Okay, and I thought that poetry cannot operate without making reference to the specific you, the you of the other in the erotic field and your you. And then, of course, somehow refer to the unconditional we of the limitless gathering. Now, for me, that was a limitation. And I started experiencing it as the limitation of poetry itself. Because poetry just by itself cannot enact the we without the grounding, if you like, of the gathering of the two, the very specific you. So it was poetry that I thought was an escapism for me. Because in enacting the death of the we, a death without conditions, I found myself relying upon the, if you like, intensity of the living moment of the erotic bond between the two, you see? If you like, the grounding of the body, the grounding of the touching, the grounding of, you know, those kinds of things. And that created a kind of despairing, if you like, for me. Is it possible to somehow reactivate, somehow, somewhere, this unconditional we that the encounter with strangers invokes. And philosophy for me became the challenge to answer this question. A deeper sense of the erotic, or if you like, a deeper sense of death, you know.
What motivates you to nevertheless keep writing poetry, which when I read it, and we haven't referred to the Greek poems today, but both in Greek and in English, there are such powerful images running through those poems.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure what the motivation is, because I sense in my poetry, as I sense it in, you know, the poets and the poems I read, a sense of, if you like, burden or suffering or despair. But at the same time, I'm not quite sure what the motivation is to keep dwelling in those kind of spaces.
Is it the lyrical call? Does that sort of pull you all the time?
Yeah, there is an intensity there. There is an intensity there. Or perhaps I follow Yanis Ritsos when he says that a word is true when it insists on the gathering, although the gathering in history has been cancelled so many times. And perhaps the motivation here is a sense of, if you like, ultimately everything so simple, and the bearer of this kind of simplicity becomes the poem. And then this kind of, again, deep desire is to be able to speak simply or be able to give a poetic dimension to philosophy and create a kind of understanding that is very simple. Ah, this is how things are.
Mm.
And somehow you wish you wake up and you are free of, I don't know, all those shortcomings that determine human history, you know, the hate, the war, whatever, yeah.
Well, I found reading the works, and in particular Ash poems, because you mentioned before giving the poetic dimension to the philosophy. I don't think that's all that the poetry does, but I felt that quite strongly, that here is a body of work, because it's not just Ash poems, there's a body of work in poetry that you have produced that is giving the poetic dimension of the philosophy that you are engaging in and exploring. But it puzzled me, and it had me suspended with this question that I asked before, which was, well, is the poetry the origin, or is it the philosophy, or is it a kind of a dimension of one and the other? And this interrelationship between the philosophical works and the poetic works. And how does one read this work if one isn't aware of the philosophical work? There are such beautiful erotic images with the sense of eros, the Platonic sense of eros, that I think the collection can be read as an ode to love as well. Platonic love, erotic love. And I found that quite a challenge to interpret the work.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how to answer it, Tina. I find it a challenge to relate to my work as my work, so to speak. Every time I go back to poems or to the philosophy, I just found myself re-entering strange places and, in a sense, beginning from the beginning. But given how much the modern Western era is determined now by abstract concepts, scientific, technological, legal, political, I guess I want to harness the power of abstraction to create worlds and make it erotic, because the power of abstraction, as we're experiencing today, is very non-erotic. I wanted to make it erotic. So deep down, perhaps, I'm asking the question whether the concept can become erotic or whether we need to move towards a kind of hybrid. When we had coffee, you mentioned another kind of being, you know, a kind of hybrid, a poetic philosophy and a kind of philosophical poetry that both are informed with the fundamental happening of the gathering. This is the horizon, if you like, within which both should operate. So in a sense, I find myself in the poems I write and in the philosophy try to communicate, so to speak, with those who might be experienced as coming from the future, who are perhaps monsters. I mean, not monsters in the negative sense, erotic monsters. Erotic monsters in the sense that we cannot even imagine them. So you try to imagine the unimaginable. And perhaps this is the challenge of the human gathering itself faces. And perhaps this is what we humans try to achieve through poetry, philosophy, and sometimes politics. We are the material of creating this totally strange reality. And we have the sense of it in poetry and philosophy, perhaps. I'm being optimistic here.
Would you like to finish with a poem or some poems that for you represent the essence of your work as a poet and as a philosopher?
It's a tough one. Yeah. Perhaps I will read the last poem. Or the second last, I guess. I sprinkle history with vowels and consonants, not to forget me. With the ancient silence of my hands, I wash your face. Begin again to resist beginning. You are the blessed one. Yeah. I'm not quite sure how to position myself with respect to this poem. But, history here becomes something of a mystery, of an enigma. History, the cemetery, of course, of humans who have suffered injustices, but also the cemetery of dead words.
And of desire.
And of desire, thank you. Even dead words carry desires. Yeah.
Thank you, George.
Thanks, Tina. Thank you very much.
I'm Tina Janoukas. You've been listening to Spoken Word on 3CR. Today's program was part two of my conversation with poet and philosopher George Vassilakopoulos about his new collection, Ash Poems, published in English by Repress. Ash Poems is available to buy online. You can also download the podcast of both part one and today's program. Spoken Word broadcasts every Thursday at 9 a.m. on 855 a.m. Thank you for listening.